Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. So today I'm actually going to be doing a solo show, which I haven't done since, well, one of the first five shows. And there's a couple reasons for that, but really the main one is I had a lot of guests that were lined up, and due to COVID and some circumstances, everybody had to reschedule. So, I mean, this is kind of what's going on with the pandemic, right? Lots of different changes. We're all having to alter things, or things are coming up, and that's just kind of the nature of things this past year. So, you're just getting me today. And what I decided to do was actually go through some of the messages I've been receiving and just go through. And I looked at some of the questions I've been getting. And one of the most frequent ones that I get is people really struggling with trying to understand the difference between disordered eating and what an eating disorder is. So I really want to touch base with you on that, because I think there is some confusion about that, because oftentimes I'll say disordered eating or an eating disorder, and I do get it. It can be confusing. So just want to clear that up today, because, you know, we live in a culture and society where diets and food fads come and go so quickly, and, you know, we're constantly bombarded with ads for weight loss programs. And you know, it's really common to hear people say things like, oh, I was so bad over the weekend. I ate so much. You know, I need to be good all week. Or I was so stressed. I ate half a pint of ice cream last night. People so often discuss this in the manner in which they're eating their feelings as a means to cope. And it can be hard to really understand or discern when one's eating practices shift from disorder eating into an eating disorder. So how do you know? Well, let's first talk about what non-disordered eating is. Someone who does not have an eating disorder or disordered eating eats food because they're hungry, physically hungry. They stop eating when they're no longer hungry. So they incorporate a variety of foods into their diet and eat what they want to eat when they want to eat it. Food, really, to them is fuel and nutrition. And, you know, sure, they may enjoy food as well, even really like food. And they may even eat when they're not physically hungry or past the point of no longer hungry. So I'll give you an example. Let's say someone goes to a wedding and has dinner. They're probably no longer physically hungry when the wedding cake is served, but they're probably going to eat the wedding cake, and they're going to choose to eat it when it comes, but they're past the point of physically satiated. However, what's going to happen is they're not really going to think about it. What they're not going to do is they're not going to guilt themselves over it, and they're not going to berate themselves. They're just going to eat it and then go about their life. They'll probably really enjoy the cake too, right? They're going to taste it and enjoy it. Now, some people may think they're non-disordered eaters, but they really have disordered eating. And unlike what I just described about the person that eats for fuel and nutrition, people with disordered eating, they eat for reasons other than when they are physically hungry, like when they're bored or stressed. And they also may have stopped eating certain foods and therefore may have cut out an entire food group. For instance, maybe they no longer eat carbs or fat. And they oftentimes claim that they're doing this for quote unquote health reasons, yet they usually don't have an underlying health condition that would require them to make such a dietary change. And people who have disordered eating may also, you may see that they do things like have the same thing for lunch every day, or they'll do things like measure out and prepare their own food. They're really particular about that. So they may have this preoccupation with weight loss and exercise and what they're eating, but overall, none of this really interferes with or keeps them from living their life. You know, so they can easily go out socially and find foods to eat at parties or restaurants, and they're just comfortable with how they're eating and their food choices, and they have really no desire to change. And so to the rest of us, it might look a little rigid, or it might look like, gosh, they're always eating so quote unquote healthy, or they're really into fitness or exercise. And maybe they're talking about what they're eating a lot. And they certainly believe they're being healthy and may even say things like, oh, I'm just watching my weight. And they just really don't want to change their lifestyle. And for some, this is just a way they want to live their lives. However, for others, this way of eating can be a precursor to a full-fledged eating disorder. And unfortunately, this is where the fine line and confusion kind of sets in. So yes, in many cases, it's hard to distinguish when someone, even maybe yourself, is struggling with disordered eating versus an eating disorder. So if I put my doctor hat on for just a second, I have to say this. Unless you're someone who fits the description of the person I described as not having disordered eating or an eating disorder, then it's really important to take a good hard look at your patterns and behaviors in relation to food and exercise, because doing this is going to help distinguish between disordered eating and having an eating disorder. So when someone is struggling with an eating disorder, their entire life is consumed by thoughts, feelings, and behaviors related to food and body image. These behaviors can involve food, or they may relate to body image or mood. So I'm going to talk about behaviors for a minute. If you just look at someone's behaviors, they can be deceiving because many people, they really hide what they're doing. So you can't just look at that. So I know for myself, when I was in my eating disorder, I hid a lot of what I was doing. So people really had no idea what I was doing behind closed doors. But it also gets kind of confusing because you may look at somebody, and there are people, for instance, who eat large quantities of food, see, and they don't have disordered eating or an eating disorder. So I'll give you an example, like Olympian athletes who are in training, for instance, they don't have an eating disorder, but they're eating a large quantity of food. So you need to really take into consideration what someone's behaviors are in the context of what they're doing and who they are and all of that as well. But you also need to take into context someone's behaviors in the context of how often they're engaging in these behaviors. This is just something to consider. So if somebody is eating large amounts of quantities of food several times a week, and you're constantly seeing this, and maybe they're not an Olympian athlete, that's just something to think about. Or if you're noticing one of your friends, or maybe even yourself, just skipping several meals throughout the week, and that wasn't something that you or they did before. Just something to take note of. So another thing to look at is, like, say, for instance, someone is only eating very specific vegetables for every meal. And what will happen is they'll choose to actually forego eating if these vegetables aren't available for them to eat. So instead of actually eating, they just won't eat. So that's something to consider as a red flag for an eating disorder. Versus, for instance, someone who routinely has salad for lunch every day, but they can and will eat something other than salad if, for instance, they're asked to go out to eat at a restaurant with friends one day for lunch. That's more disordered eating. So like I was saying, they have this ritual of, like, they have their quote-unquote salad that they pre-made every day, but they're still able to go, and maybe they'll still get a salad, but it'll be at the restaurant. Someone who has an eating disorder may not be able to do that. What will happen is they will say, no, I can't go. I can't go to lunch, because that's just too difficult to kind of wrap their mind around, like, oh gosh, this altered what I had planned in my mind for eating lunch. And the life of someone who has an eating disorder, it's simply consumed by the illness. the level of obsession around eating disorder thoughts and behaviors, that can distinguish disordered eating from an eating disorder. So while it can be normal to think about food when you're hungry or try and plan what you're going to make for your next meal, for someone who's struggling with an eating disorder, the thoughts are really all-consuming. So I know when I was in the throes of my eating disorder, all I could think about all day, every day, was about how many calories I was eating, what I had just eaten, or what I wanted to eat. I thought about how I was going to fit in time to go to the grocery store just to make sure I could have my last meal several hours before bed. I mean, I can't even tell you what I was thinking all the time. It was awful. And this level of obsession, it took over my life, but nobody really knew how bad it was. People knew I was isolating more because I would really decline social invitations, especially the ones that involve food. So if people wanted to go out to dinner or happy hour, I was like, nope, sorry. But other than that, nobody really knew the extent to which my entire world revolved around food or how much it was on my mind. So take, for example, the one I gave above, the person at the wedding who didn't have disordered eating or an eating disorder. When I had my eating disorder, if I was the person in that situation, if I was going to a wedding, I would have probably been consumed with thoughts about the wedding from the second I got the invitation. I would have been worried and anxious about what I was going to wear. I would have been consumed with fear about looking, in my mind back then, quote unquote, too fat in anything even to attend. And if I happened to manage to go, which might not have even happened, I would have been consumed with thoughts about what I needed to do in the days beforehand just to earn or allow myself to eat the food that would be there. And that's no joke. I probably would have been over-exercising or restricting my food just to say, okay, I can allow myself to eat the food that's going to be there. And that's so sad. I think about that. And that's really what happens. It's just this obsessiveness. And, you know, I would definitely probably have tried to calculate in my mind the amount of calories and nutritional content of whatever I was served. I can imagine that right now. And actually, if something had come with like cream sauce or anything like that, I probably would have scraped it off or asked for no dressing. And I'm just imagining cake time. And I can see, you know, someone who has an eating disorder. I'm trying to differentiate for you the difference between someone who has non-eating disordered behaviors versus someone who has eating disorder behaviors. Like someone who has eating disorder behaviors, when cake time would come at a wedding, they'd probably be so desperate to want to eat it, but would probably decline it, knowing they'd feel so guilty. And their mind would be warped with things like telling themselves they gained so much weight if they ate it. And this is the interesting part. They would probably eat the cake. And if they did that, well, this is one option. If they ate the cake, they'd probably go home and feel so guilty and so bad. And then they tell themselves, oh my gosh, you know what? I already broke the dam. I already screwed up. I might as well eat everything now anyway. And so go into full binge mode and then say, you know what, I'll start again. I'll quote unquote be good tomorrow. But interestingly, there might have been that same behavior of the binge if they hadn't eaten the cake. So declining the cake, feeling that deprivation, saying, oh gosh, I wish I could have eaten the cake, and coming home and being so overwhelmed with deprivation and just feelings, and also resulting in a binge. So sometimes the behaviors can come about, but for very different reasons. So, you know, after a binge, usually there's a lot of feelings of shame and guilt and remorse and beating yourself up, berating, and lots of negative self-talk about how failure and screwed up again, and why did I do this? And I know for myself, I would take that and just overly restrict and over-exercise to make up for it. And, you know, I would fear getting that outcome on the scale. And you know, I remember doing that and just going, oh my gosh, what's this number going to be? And that number had so much power over my emotional state and my self-worth for the day. And I know I shared some of that before in my earlier podcast. But that scale was just, it's something for people who have disordered eating or eating disorders. But I think the difference with someone who's an eating disorder is it really has this ultimate power. It's like, it really does take over what happens after that. So after you see the number, it's the mood for the day, the behaviors you engage in after that. And definitely it impacts even how you feel in your clothes. So whatever the number says is, you're convinced, right? Or at least I remember being convinced, oh my gosh, I certainly gained weight. Like my clothes are so much tighter. They probably weren't, but it was just that mindset. It was so powerful. And I would tell myself things like, oh my gosh, I'm disgusting. I'm worthless. What did I do? And it was just this consuming, this all-consuming thing of trying to chase, I don't even know what. It was just chasing something, chasing a smaller number, chasing a smaller size, chasing trying to eat more perfectly. And when I didn't eat perfectly or whatever I thought was perfect, it was just this berating. I'm a failure. So another way to tell the difference between disordered eating and having an eating disorder is by looking at how someone's life is affected. Really saying, and asking yourself too, if you're wondering this for yourself, are you functioning normally? When someone's eating patterns take them away from normal functioning, this is really a strong indication of an eating disorder. So for instance, I hear all the time from people I work with, they won't go out with friends because they fear being judged by what they eat, or they skip school or sleep or work in order to make sure they fit in time to work out or exercise. And I also know I've shared in a previous podcast some of my own behaviors and how dysfunctional my life started to become because of my eating disorder. And, you know, I really could kick myself now for how many parties and fun times I missed out on simply because I needed to go to the gym. To me, it was just not an option because the extreme anxiety I felt along with this all these incessant critical thoughts I had as a result of not going to the gym simply did not make it worth not going. I know I'd rather feel calm and have peace of mind than go out and be in this state of self-induced misery the entire time. And that's what it would be. If I didn't go, I would just be miserable, which is awful. Sometimes people who have an eating disorder at one point had disordered eating. But I want to caution you here. It does not mean that someone who has disordered eating will end up with an eating disorder. I do think it's important to know that one can lead to the other. And therefore, it's important to have awareness of what disordered eating is and isn't, which is why I'm talking about it. But I also strongly encourage anyone out there who's listening, if you're struggling with an eating disorder, disordered eating, or body image issues, please seek help. There are many certified professionals out there who are specialized in treating eating disorders, and you don't have to struggle with this all by yourself. This is an illness. Eating disorders are an illness. This is not lack of willpower. This is not your choice. You're not a failure. This is not you not being the best dieter. You're not lazy. This is actually something you're struggling with, and you can get help. So don't let anybody tell you, oh, you just need to eat less. You just need to exercise more. You just need to do it better next time. It's not that. This is beyond that. Don't listen to those messages. Dieting makes this worse. If you go on a diet, this makes everything worse. Not better. And I know that's the push. I know that's the desire. It's like, okay, I'm just going to go control my food with a diet. That'll make everything better. But it actually, if you really think about it, how many diets have you been on? If they worked, you would still be on the first one. they don't work, they make you feel horrible about yourself. So as you're listening to this, if you really want to get help, I'm going to post a link on my website where you can find a certified eating disorder therapist. And just make sure to head over there after the show. Because I think it's important, if you're going to get help, to really work with someone who specializes in this, someone who really gets it. All right. I hope that makes sense. I hope it clarifies some for you about the difference between disordered eating and an eating disorder. I know it's still maybe a little bit confusing for you, but again, if you want help, definitely go see a therapist and get some help for this. All right, everyone. As always, thank you for being here and thank you for listening. And I hope you enjoyed the show. And I just want to say something. If you have questions, if you have something that's on your mind, go to the website, email me. I will possibly do a podcast about it. I will definitely email you directly and answer it. So please don't be shy. I am listening to all of you. I do care about what you think and what you want to hear. So anyway, if you like the show, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And please go to my website at behindthebitepodcast.com, where you can get my free 9-week email course and start your journey to making peace with your struggles with food and your body. Until next time, to your health, everyone.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.